Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage takes the frustrations out of getting a mortgage by letting you safely share your financial information with the touch of a button. Get approved online in minutes at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. For a party trying to show a united front to the nation, day one was a rocky start. Things got heated inside the arena when the never-Trump delegates tried to break with the program. In the evening, delegates heard from Melania Trump and a heavy dose of Make America Safe Again. This hour On Point, the GOP's opening round and how the world sees Donald Trump. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What are you seeing, hearing out of Cleveland? What do you think the world is seeing? Is it time for a foreign policy restart with Donald Trump? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to go in a few minutes to a panel of observers from right around the world, but first, right here at home. Joining me from the Broadcast Center here in Cleveland is Martha Raddatz, Chief Global Affairs Correspondent for ABC News. She is just off a listening tour road trip from Dallas to Cleveland, talking with voters all the way, on the way to the Republican Convention. She was watching, along with everybody else, opening night of Republican Convention 2016 last night. Martha Raddatz, welcome, and it's great to have you right here.
And it's great to see you, Tom, and be back on the show. Always love it.
We love having you. There's so much we want to look at here. Let's start with Melania Trump. There's been so much attention with her overnight. Here she was last night saying, I've been with Donald a long time. He loves me. I love him. He loves the country.
I have been with Donald for 18 years, and I have been aware of his love for this country since we first met. He never had a hidden agenda when it comes to his patriotism, because, like me, he loves this country very much.
Martha Raddatz, you were watching last night, kind of a one-of-a-kind potential first lady there with that Slovenian origin still coming through loud and clear. She made 10 years a U.S. citizen now, I think. She made much of, she tried to personalize Donald Trump a little bit, and then there has been all the talk about how much her speech tracked Michelle Obama's speech in Denver in 2008, and some of that is pretty darn close. We'll hear it. Overall, you're watching this. What do you think, as a woman, as an observer of global affairs, and after your road trip from Dallas, immediate American politics, did Melania help Donald? And what about this aftermath with the copycat charge?
Well, certainly when you're in the arena, she came off as charming. That's not easy. You know, she's
in front
of 35 million people, essentially, and talking to the audience there at home.
Her delivery was pretty darn good.
Just
the delivery. She stood up there and did it.
Her delivery was terrific. Yeah. She was charming. She was beautiful. She was very...
Well, there's that. She's a model.
She was very... Yeah, she's got that going for sure. But she's... You know, the inside, the arena, she clearly charmed them. And then what happens after that is the Twitter storm, and people are talking about possible plagiarism. I think today, you know, you've heard the campaign say, of course she wasn't trying to plagiarize.
Come on. On the other hand, we're hearing somebody's going to be fired.
Yeah, somebody's going to be fired. Is it the staff? You know, she told Matt Lauer from NBC that she mostly wrote the speech.
So which is it?
Which is it? The truth is, I think this will go away. I think people will remember. I mean, obviously they're going to remember this. Obviously they're going to be jokes about it forever. But does it matter when people vote? She's not really running for president. She got out there. She charmed the audience. She charmed people at home. So I'm not sure that's something that will really stick in about a week. I bet if I called all those people on the road and said, what'd you think of that? They'd probably laugh. They'd probably say, oh, yeah, it kind of sounded like she copied
sounded
that
familiar
speech.
Sounded familiar somehow.
But when you go to the voting booth, does that matter?
It's not gone yet. Let's listen just a little bit side by side. First Lady Michelle Obama's words, followed by Melania Trump's here in Cleveland last night.
And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life.
The values that you work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
That you treat people with dignity and respect.
That you treat people with respect.
Okay, Martha Raddatz is with me from ABC News. We're in Cleveland at the Republican Convention. That may be gone in a week, but this morning...
I know,
that
head
just
spinning.
Holy cow, somebody picked that up and said, hey, that's pretty good. That Melania would sound good saying that, and there it is.
And you wonder how that happened. Did they... I mean, like anybody, when you're researching or when you look at other speeches, you look at other speeches, you look at what Michelle Obama said, you look at what
word
Laura Bush
word,
said.
Word for word, phrase for phrase, paragraph for paragraph,
word,
I don't know.
Maybe cut and paste got somebody in trouble here.
Maybe it'll be gone in a week, maybe it won't. I mean, people do say...
I don't think people will ever forget that. I think they will not forget it.
Yeah.
It will be the moment in this, certainly night one of the convention, that they remember. On the other hand, when you go to the voting booth, does it matter? Do you look at the Trump campaign and say, oh, boy, oh, no. They did that, they didn't that.
Though we have people tweeting at us and saying, this speaks to the governing capacity.
I knew, a speech writing
team together that wasn't just ripping off some stuff from Michelle and throwing it up there from Melania, who Donald Trump clearly cares about, and
yes.
He wanted that to be a good moment last night.
Yes, no, he clearly did. He came out. He had a record short speech.
Yeah.
I think George Stephanopoulos and I were sitting there timing it. I think it came in at about a minute.
Only
after
for
all,
Mrs. Trump. Nobody
only
else gets
for,
that.
Only nobody for else. Mrs. Trump.
We've got bigger fish to fry here. The overall tone last night, I mean, I'm reading here Politico talking about death metal doom as the kind of atmosphere in the hall. You've just been on the road. So I want to play some of this and hear from you. We know people are upset. We know they think the country's on the wrong track. But do they think we're at sort of the end, it's like end of the world time? Political saying here, you know, two primetime hours of viewers hit with a relentless recitation of death, anger, danger, helplessness, blood, murder, fear, terror.
Prison. It was sent to prison about Hillary Clinton.
Here was, this is just one moment, Rudy Giuliani. I mean, he was all full of fire and brimstone last night. Here he's talking about black America and white America, but almost talking about all of America. What's happened to America? Giuliani.
What happened to, there's no black America, there's no white America, there is just America! What happened to it? Where did it go? How was it flown away?
Martha Raddatz, and what you really hear out of that is, America, where did it go? Has it just flown away? You've just come sort of stop by stop from Dallas to Cleveland. You made a lot of stops along the way. Oklahoma, Missouri, up through Illinois and Indiana. Are people, how freaked out are people? Are they that freaked out that heavy, you know, dark death metal is what the sort of soundtrack of their view of the country?
I'm with you, Tom. I was surprised by the tone last night. It was so dark. They played to the emotions in the room. Certainly there were people, I'm sure you saw, weeping when they heard the stories from former SEALs.
People who died in Benghazi. People whose children were killed, they said, by illegal immigrants.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what I found on the road. And we'd done some voters in Ohio and Pennsylvania. People are, it sort of tracked exactly with some of the polls. People are very concerned about the country. Donald Trump talks to those fears. He talks to that racial divide. He talks to the threat of terrorists. And people are scared right now. There is no question about it. You know, week after week, we see our
Dallas,
flags
Baton
at
Rouge,
half staff.
St. Paul, Baton Rouge again, all
and,
really
and
upsetting.
That's what, you know, I went and we did our This Week program from Dallas after the terrible murders of the police officers there, and then immediately went on the road. And the theme of "Are my children safe?" was so important to people.
Right now or in the future?
Both of them. So when you talk to people who are undecided, and that surprised me more than anything, how many people are truly undecided, and I would go further than that and say unhappy with the choice. Because if you say, you know, look at the polls. I think 2-1 people say that they think Hillary Clinton would handle
it
internationally.
In Ferguson, Missouri. Somebody said to you, I don't like Trump and Hillary. I'm done with Clinton-era politics. I want something different. But
the most surprising thing to me is that it cut across racial lines. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you look at the polling and Hillary Clinton certainly has the minority advantage in a big way. But there was one point in Missouri I asked a white man who he wanted to vote for, and he said, I can't decide. I ask an African-American woman, I can't decide. I ask a Mexican immigrant. Right after that, one after the other,
none could
undecided.
Decide.
I mean, the idea that somebody right now is saying, I don't know whether I want Trump or Hillary Clinton, it tells you how much they are concerned about the choice they have.
That's pretty wild. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, in town yesterday, talking at a luncheon. But he was sort of scolding Donald Trump, didn't use his name, but for resentment-oriented appeals, saying we should all kind of chill, calm down, and change our tone going forward. I've got to ask you, you've covered so many conflicts around the world, Martha Raddatz. We had Tom Cotton, Arkansas Republican senator last night on this stage, talking about what he wants as a former military guy in a commander-in-chief.
We'd like a commander-in-chief who speaks of winning wars and not merely ending wars.
Yeah, big cheer in the hall. We have had a lot of conflicts that ended in muddles or worse. Now, who started those and how they were executed, a lot of that in most recent history goes back to George W. Bush. Barack Obama had to deal. Donald Trump sounds fierce. He'll talk about bombing those suckers and all the rest. But when we're going to hear from correspondents from around the world in this hour. But when you look at Donald Trump and what he says, the full paragraphs or sentence fragments on foreign policy, do you see a coherent new vision of what that would be? One where there's wars, but we win wars. One where there's more clarity. One where we've got alliances, but if they don't pay up, maybe we don't have alliances. Does it add up to you?
And if you ask the follow-up question, you don't get any more information than that. These are complicated times. ISIS is a complicated battle. Utah, and I was over there just a couple of months ago in Iraq, and you talk to commanders, you talk to people on the ground, and they are the first to tell you this is not all about the military. And that's what we have pretty much heard, that from Donald Trump, from his people, it's, we're going to bomb ISIS. We are bombing ISIS. We're bombing ISIS every single day. The real issue here with ISIS is, what do you do about the so-called lone wolves? What is the strategy there? And I'm not sure any of the candidates has really told us what you do.
Is there a tone problem? And that's a fundamental Trump critique of the Obama administration. The tone of the U.S. leadership has been weak, has not been clear, has not been, just crystal clear to the world.
When you look back, I think President Obama has said the same thing. It's the Syrian red line. I think that's what people go back to and say.
He said, you do this,
you
that's
do that,
the red line,
that's the red line, and they crossed right over it.
Well, Donald Trump surely would not talk about.
But that message is getting through. The message is getting through. I'm telling you
that. The
message of strength, the message of we'll go after them, is getting through to those voters I talk to.
The Trump message.
Because they are scared.
Martha Raddatz, Chief Global Affairs Correspondent for ABC News, just off the road from Dallas to Cleveland with us here at the Republican National Convention. Great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook in Cleveland. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We are in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, where last night Donald Trump made his remarkable entrance, the fog machine rolling there, to introduce Melania Trump. There was a general on the stage. Rudy Giuliani was on the stage. Of course, he was mayor of New York as we headed into the 9/11 attacks years ago. The theme of the night was Make America Safe Again. There was a lot of talk about America at home, but there was talk about America abroad as well. We want to look in this hour at how the rest of the world is watching Donald Trump and the American campaign for the presidency. Donald Trump has said a lot about what he would do in foreign policy, not in a lot of depth, but he starts right at the U.S.-Mexico border, and he started right at the very first day of his candidacy, announcing in June of last year in Trump Tower, saying he would build a wall.
I would build a great wall, and nobody builds walls better than me, believe me, and I'll build them very inexpensively. I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall. Yeah. Mark my words. Yeah.
Mark his words. That's not all he would do. He would. He said in December last year, total, complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
There's Latin America, there's the Middle East, and turned and looked at old ally NATO. Here he was in March on ABC's This Week saying we need to reimagine NATO.
NATO is obsolete, and it's extremely expensive to the United States, disproportionately so. And we should readjust NATO. And it's going to have to be either readjusted to take care of terrorism, or we're going to have to set up a new coalition, a new group of countries to handle terrorism, because terrorism is out of control.
Maybe we'll be with NATO, maybe we won't. How have foreign leaders responded? All kinds of ways. Mexico's been right in the bullseye of Donald Trump. After the Nevada caucuses in February, Fusion's Jorge Ramos interviewed businessman, former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, asking for his opinion on Donald Trump, and Fox did not mince words.
I declare, I'm not going to pay for that wall. He should pay for it. He's got the money.
Are you afraid that he's going to be the next president of the United States? What would that mean? What would that mean for Mexico?
No, not at all. Democracy cannot take us to crazy people that doesn't know what's going on in the world today.
There's former Mexican President Vicente Fox. Of course, he's out of office. He can say what he likes. But here's Mexico's current president talking about Donald Trump. This is Enrique Peña Nieto in March speaking to Euronews about Donald Trump. He dismissed the idea that his country would pay for the wall. Then he made among the most critical remarks yet of Donald Trump by a foreign leader.
There have been episodes in human history, unfortunately, where these expressions of this strident rhetoric have only led to very ominous situations in the history of humanity. That's how Mussolini got in. That's how Hitler got in.
There's one foreign leader right across the border on Donald Trump. We're going to be looking a lot at domestic politics here. We have already this morning. We will again tonight. We're live at 7 p.m. But right now, we want to get the view from around the world on this candidate and his candidacy. With me here in Cleveland, just outside the convention arena, is Joyce Karem, Washington Bureau Chief for Al Hayat, a daily pan-Arab newspaper. She's columnist for Al Arabiya English, the English service of the Television News Network. Joyce Karem, thank you so much for being with us here in Cleveland.
Hi, Tom.
Also with us right here, Gordon Rapinski, Washington correspondent for Der Spiegel, the German weekly news magazine. Gordon Rapinski, thank you so much for coming in.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
And with us just outside the security barrier, trapped there in a car, Carlos Chirinos. He's senior political editor for Univision, the Spanish language broadcast network. Carlos, we know you're out there. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Hello.
It's great to have you with us. Let's dive in right here. Can I come first to you, Gordon? There's Donald Trump saying, maybe we stay in NATO, maybe we don't, maybe we reimagine it. This is the sort of oldest arena of American alliance. When you look at Europe today and European leaders watching Donald Trump and what he's said over time, how do you see them seeing this candidate for the presidency of the United States?
Yeah, we have a lot of challenges right now in Europe and in the U.S., and there's a European approach to challenges and to foreign policy challenges. And this is that we tend to follow multilateral policy approaches. And Donald Trump seems to be the exact opposite of this. And foreign policy...
Countries working together to solve problems.
Exactly. Foreign policy is about reliability and about the ability to negotiate with partners. And the more rational these partners are, the more reliable the results will be. And Trump seems to be rather impulsive. So this will be a very, very hard negotiation.
Is Europe missing something? After all, you just lost one of your major members. Brexit means the UK is headed out. Is Donald Trump onto something that Europe doesn't understand? Or is this just a throwback to an era where great nations, big nations, would try and do things themselves?
Well, I mean, I think he doesn't really have a coherent policy strategy when it comes to foreign policy. He's a populist. He inflames latent and not so latent prejudices of the population, and also his foreign policy approaches follow this. So, what will he do? Will he be an interventionist or a non-interventionist? We actually don't know. He says he wants to have the strongest military. At the same time, he doesn't want to. He says he doesn't want to deploy his troops if he's not sure to win. How can Europeans act with that and react to that? We actually don't know. So there's a lot of insecurity, and that makes a foreign policy very hard to predict with Donald Trump.
We just heard Martha Raddatz of ABC News, their chief global affairs correspondent, saying people's concern about Obama on foreign policy, much of it goes back, Joyce Karem, to the red line in Syria. If there were chemical weapons there used, that would be the red line for American intervention. Of course, that did not happen. This was very much on the mind last night and on the lips of Republican Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton speaking at the convention, talking about the qualities he would like an American president to have. Let's listen for just a second.
A commander-in-chief who draws red lines cautiously but enforces them ruthlessly.
Draw those lines cautiously, enforce them ruthlessly. When you look at American policy in the Middle East, where there are a lot of problems right now, we look at ISIS and what has happened there. We look at Turkey just in the last few days. We look at the general, people have called it a civil war going on in some ways throughout the Middle East. You look at the Obama policy, and of course the Trump camp would say Clinton will be a continuation of that. Look at what Trump has said about the Middle East.
Right.
What are people, what are leaders in your region thinking about how his hand in the White House might change America's presence in the region and its impact in the region?
Well, Tom, I don't think there's anything cautious about Donald Trump or his policies in the Middle East.
Red line drawing or anything else?
He passed every red line in the region. I mean, we're talking about banning Muslims from coming to the United States. We're talking about creating some kind of territories for refugees, unclear where these territories would be. We're talking about bombing ISIS. I mean, bombing ISIS families. We're talking about just mass bombings in the Middle East, instituting torture. The Middle East is looking at this, and to be honest with you, they're terrified.
Terrified of what exactly? I mean, things are pretty bad already.
Yeah, but the leaders know Donald Trump. They know that Donald Trump, some have golfed with him. He has a golf course in the UAE.
Okay.
Some know him as, you know, a celebrity, a brand name.
Yeah.
They like his shops. They like his hotels. But the Donald Trump, the campaigner, the politician, they're mystified. They're perplexed. We're seeing an uptick in hate crime against Muslims in the U.S. Just here in Ohio, you saw what happened to the Emirati guy who was arrested because he was wearing the national garb and speaking Arabic. This is new.
Was he beaten up or what happened? I don't know.
He was arrested because somebody reported that.
I see, okay.
So while, you know, we understand there is a lot of fear and anger and anxiety about ISIS, but this is now a two-way street, and the fear and anger here is also a fear and anger in the region. And many don't know what Donald Trump stands for. There are no clear policies. You know, he does not like the Iran nuclear deal, but he will keep it, according to his advisor, yep. Walid Faris.
Yes, a big deal.
He wants to ban Muslims, but then again, now he wants to ban immigrants from terrorist nations.
Yes, extreme vetting. Banning, whatever you want.
There is already vetting in place. I mean, if you look at the numbers of how many refugees has the U.S. received, it's a drop in the bucket compared to Germany, compared to France, the U.K., Norway. I'm from Lebanon. We have now almost 30% of the population is refugees from the Syrian spillover. So while, you know, I see the criticism to Obama, and many see it in the region.
Maybe Obama should have been in there earlier. Maybe something should have been done before everybody was having a mass exodus from Syria.
But you know, the problems are very complex in the region, and there are no binary solutions to do this thing or that thing. So there is where this argument gets confused. We're seeing it in this convention and wider on the campaign scale.
Carlos Chirinos, I want to get to you on Latin America. Let's just have a little feeling, though, first here for Donald Trump's running mate, Mike Pence, sitting next to Trump on 60 Minutes on Sunday, talking about American foreign policy, the need for more resolve.
Weakness arouses evil. And whether it be the horrific attack in France, the inspired attacks here in the United States, the instability in Turkey that led to a coup, I think that is all a result of a foreign policy of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that has led from behind and that has sent an inexact, unclear message about American resolve.
There, Mike Pence, the vice presidential running mate of Donald Trump. Carlos Chirinos, you're here in Cleveland as well, stuck in the car outside the convention hall, but we know you're there. And, of course, he's talking about resolve. Donald Trump's first resolution as he announced his candidacy was to say, we will build a wall with Mexico. We heard a couple of Mexican leaders, Vicente Fox and the sitting president, say, the heck with that. But when you think about Latin America and Donald Trump and what you can tell of the policy he would pursue, what kind of change does it look like would be coming if he lands in the White House for Latin America, Carlos?
Well, Tom, as you said, Donald Trump has said a lot of things about the way he will deal with the foreign relationship, but he hasn't said anything in particular. So apart from the wall with Mexico, that all we thought it was a non-starter for a political campaign in this country a year ago, apart from that, and he hasn't clarified what is he going to do with the likes of Venezuelan or Cuban or Ecuadorian governments that have a difficult relationship with Washington for the last decade or so. What is clear is that people in Latin America is not particularly happy with the prospect of a President Trump, because Trump reminds a lot of people in the region to the many caudillos we have had in the past.
You're among them, strong man leader figures.
Exactly. Strong man, people very pretty charismatic, with a lot of energy, trying to present themselves as the saviors of this messy situation the country is in. But apart from that, they don't offer details. And as you say in English, the devil is in the detail. When they got to power, people is kind of frustrated later. Of course, we are talking different situations in the sense that in Latin America, the institutions are not the same as in the United States. You have here more check and balances, and you would say that that would protect the system from somebody like Donald Trump or any other strong leader. But
yep.
What I say is, I could say that people in Latin America is getting accustomed of this idea of having Donald Trump in the White House. Possibility of that, of course, it's not happening yet, and they tend to take a look at it through their own experiences of this strong men in power and the difficulties they present for the rest of the...
But Carlos, for a minute here, I mean, you're Univision, we saw how Donald Trump interacted with Jorge Ramos there. But what about Americans who say, wait a minute, we've got problems in this country. We look at the way trade has been handled, the globalization. We feel vulnerable. We feel that our borders are insecure, that we don't know how to define the perimeter anymore. What about the problems that do come up in conversation with Americans that Donald Trump has seized upon? Is there sympathy for that or respect for that side of the argument in Latin America?
Well, I think Latin America, nobody is pleased either side of the argument with the way a free trade agreement has worked in the past. I mean, you have the same complaints in Mexico or the rest of Latin America. But you remember, for example, when Hugo Chavez came to power, he practically destroyed this prospect of creating an American free trade zone. And that conversation stopped because Hugo Chavez and the rest of this leftist government in the region decided not to follow the lead of Washington. That so nobody is happy with the result of the trade agreement in the last 2 decades or so. So I my feeling is that people in Mexico can understand the problems that people in Pennsylvania or Ohio or anywhere in the Rust Belt are feeling, because they are confronting this lack of opportunities, the economic downturn, and everything. And all of them blaming to the corporations and the trade agreements that, according to them, are the only ones who benefited from those schemes. So it's curious, because people could understand in Latin America, and people couldn't relate to the arguments that Donald Trump is presenting to the vanishing middle class in the United States. But at the same time, they fear that kind of leadership. So I don't think that people feel that it's, although he's talking something that engaged with people in the United States, they don't feel that it could be the way to deal with that, to solve it, because it will affect the rest of the continent as well, mainly Mexico, for example.
Foreign leaders paying close attention, responding carefully. Here was Angela Merkel. This was a press conference in Germany in April. An American reporter asked her about Donald Trump.
How do you view the possibility of working with a new U.S. president who has called your refugee policy insane and has raised the specter of dissolving NATO?
I concentrate on the task ahead for 2016. I'm quite busy with that, thank you very much. And I'm looking with great interest at the American election campaign.
talk about a non-response response, but who can't understand that from Germany's leader, Angela Merkel, right there. We are talking this hour, and we'll come to your calls in just a moment. We're talking about the fiery start of the Republican National Convention and how the world sees Donald Trump. We are in Cleveland, right next to the convention hall, with Gordon Rapinski. He is Washington correspondent for Der Spiegel, the big German weekly news magazine. With Joyce Karem, Washington bureau chief for Al Hayat, the daily Pan-American newspaper. Carlos Chirinos is with us, senior political editor for Univision, the Spanish language broadcast network. You can join us. How did you see, hear the opening night speeches last night? What do you think about Trump and how he sees the world, how the world sees him? I'm Tom Ashbrook in Cleveland. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. Forget about digging through stacks of paperwork. This completely online process lets you safely share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. Using a phone or tablet, you can get approved for purchase or refinance in just a few minutes. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fiery start of the Republican National Convention last night and how the world sees Donald Trump. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Were you listening last night? Have you been listening all the way along on the campaign trail as the general was up there, as Rudy Giuliani was up there, as we heard the stories of Navy SEALs and we heard the story of illegal stories off of illegal immigration and crime there from supporters of Donald Trump? You can join us this hour. Are you getting clearer on the Trump view of the world? Did you hear a vision of American strength, American savvy from the stage last night? How do you think the world sees Donald Trump? Do you care? His first order of business last night as he came in through the fog machine, backlit, all the rest, very dramatic entrance to introduce his wife, Melania Trump. We are the champions, blaring through the speakers.
It is my great honor to present the next First Lady of the United States. My wife, an amazing mother, an incredible woman, Melania Trump. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
That was the cozy part of the evening. Of course, lots of talk after about how her speech tracks so closely to that of Michelle Obama in Denver in 2008. But Donald Trump was calling into Bill O'Reilly during that convention evening, even while some of his most compelling speakers were on the stage. He's been with Bill O'Reilly before. Here he was thinking about his view of the world. This was on July 14th after the terrorist attack in Nice. Bill O'Reilly asked Donald Trump if he would go to Congress and ask for a declaration of war.
I would. This is war. If you look at it, this is war coming from all different parts. And frankly, it's war and we're dealing with people without uniforms. You know, in the old days, we'd have uniforms. You knew what you were fighting. These people were allowing people into our country who we have no idea where they are, where they're from.
Gordon Rapinski is with us from Der Spiegel, Carlos Chirinos from Univision, Joyce Karem from Al Hayat. Gordon, we have news that the leader of the Brexit movement that ultimately succeeded, Nigel Farage with the UKIP, Nationalist Party in the UK that was so forth. This is apparently coming to the convention to join the Republican convention where Donald Trump will be nominated. What kind of signal is that? I mean, Donald Trump was already out there praising Brexit. He was for Brexit. What does it say to Europe when the guy who led the Brexit is welcomed, would seem with open arms, to Cleveland and the Republican kind of coronation of Trump?
Very honestly, it doesn't really surprise me that Nigel Farage comes to Cleveland. Yesterday, I saw Geert Wilders, who's the leader of the Nationalist Party in the Netherlands. So now Nigel Farage, this is the same kind of character. It's also their success is built upon the same kind of movement. Brexit, you named it, is a clear example of what can be a result of a strong anti-establishment movement. And this is what is happening in the U.S. As well. But if you see what happened with Brexit, there are voters who mainly wanted to express their dissatisfaction with the government and the system, just as it's happening in the U.S. And all of a sudden, on the election day, they win or they won the majority. And what you saw that only one day after that, they started, or some people at least, started to regret their decision.
In the UK.
In the UK, exactly.
And many of those who led the movement were then asked, okay, what do we do now? They didn't have an answer.
Exactly. They didn't have an answer. So this is, I think, if there's a lesson learned from Brexit for the US, it is you don't gamble with democracy. It is a serious thing. And I hope that all these people who support Donald Trump in the US are very clear about the consequences, what Donald Trump in the White House would mean.
But Joyce, you see Americans looking around the world and they see a world that looks very disorderly. I mean, if the way that we've been going is so great, why so many problems? And Donald Trump speaks to that.
No, obviously. And he builds on the fear and anger you hear in Middle America. You hear when Nice attack happened, when Orlando happened. There is definitely this anxiety in the American public, and that's valid. And more should be done. But at the same time, I mean, these problems are very complex. And just saying, oh, we're going to do another war. Okay, what does that mean? Where? We're going to bomb ISIS. Well, there has been more than 10,000 strikes on ISIS. It's just much more complex and goes deeper than this. You cannot talk about uprooting ISIS without going back to the post-Iraq war, to the disaffected Sunnis. You cannot talk about the refugee problem without addressing the power structure in Syria, the political solution in Syria. What we're seeing here, I mean, it scares me because we're going back to the mindset that force can just uproot evil and this is it. We're
fair,
done.
Fair yeah. enough. But there's a political side of this equation as well. We saw it in the UK. Maybe we're seeing it in the United States right now. For only so long do people want to hear it's complicated and not see things get better. Tell them it's complex and not see improvement. At a certain point, there's a political intolerance that sets in for that.
There is but if you're going to face this political intolerance with more intolerance and with more force, it's not going to make it better. I mean, look what's happening in right now, you know, with the rise of radicalization in the Middle East. ISIS has used Donald Trump rhetoric in their own videos.
And I've many been people take it all the way back to the Iraq war in the first place, sort of blowing
you know,
all that off.
Regimes,
including Donald Trump, by the way.
And terrible regimes in the Middle East, they use Guantanamo and the torture tactics to legitimize their own brutality against citizens. So when we look up to the United States, I studied here, mm-hmm. many of us come here.
Yes.
We look up to American values, to upholding international law. We look up for you know, as a beacon of freedom and democracy in the world, not as one of bigotry.
But, Gordon, there is a point, and Britain's seen it already, and you talked about the Netherlands. Germany has its own nationalist parties again, France, of course. There is a point where there's a reality to politics as well and people's unease.
Absolutely, and it's a horribly complex situation. But as a matter of fact, the shooter of the Orlando shooter, he's a New York-born guy. In Nice, you have the same thing. It's a French person. So, I mean, you can declare war just as Donald Trump yeah. did that, but what does it help? What do you want to do? You want to carpet bomb New York, or do you want to carpet bomb France? I mean, the problem is, as a matter of fact, nobody knows a fast and effective solution. So you need deliberate policies. You need well-thought-out decisions. And this is just what Donald Trump, what we can't expect from Donald Trump. This is why it's so dangerous.
We're going to turn to our listeners. Lewis in Atlanta, Georgia. Lewis, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. This debacle is going on in Cleveland. This is the best thing that could happen for the Democrats. It's just exposing everything. It's so crazy about these people.
Lewis, I don't know if it's a debacle. I don't know if it's a debacle. You got to wait and see on that. I mean, maybe you didn't like what you heard last time, but maybe somebody else did.
Well, it's almost like the Birth of a Nation Part 2, you know, with all the lynchality stuff going on in the background and, you know, the demagoguery against Hillary, every possible time they could bring it up. It's unbelievable. This is the best thing that's happened for the Democrats.
Lewis, we got it. We got it. Maybe you're right. I don't know. We'll see. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air. Thanks for calling us in Cleveland.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You really have to compare
Obama's wife, I mean, Trump's wife to Obama's wife in their speeches? Come on. If the Mideast Muslims are afraid, maybe they should all read the Quran. Everything that's going on is mandated in the Quran, and get out of Islam.
You think the Middle East is going to get out of Islam? Come on, Craig. Why shouldn't we look at what Melania said last night? I mean, I'm complimentary on her delivery, but if it's like Michelle's, so close.
The Constitution says we're supposed to protect the people of this country.
Yeah.
We can't even protect our allies in France.
What are you thinking when you hear these are complicated problems and they need long-term serious answers? What do you think to that, Craig?
Quran. Read it. The 273 verses about killing people. It's mandated. Mandated to take over the world for Allah.
Craig, we've got it. I appreciate your call. I'm not sure that I would read it exactly the same way, but I mean, you can look in there and you can find tough stuff. There's no doubt about that. Look in the Bible, too. Monica, Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I am a caller in Cambridge, and I'm extremely concerned, actually, with the candidacy of both candidates, but particularly Donald Trump. I'm not picking parties, but really the traits that I see is he evokes law and order, that he will be the president of law and order. First, I do question where are his taxes. I'm a lawyer myself, and to apply for this high office, that's the first thing. We need to be transparent and clear with our obligations as citizens. So,
what's wrong with law and order, Monica? What's wrong with law and order?
Definitely, he does not follow the law or the order by providing his finances. Number two, I definitely agree, given more to the point of this morning's comments, mm-hmm. I agree very much with the journalist of Spiegel that to make rational decisions in foreign diplomacy and foreign policy, definitely that is the key to coming with for good outcomes. And here we have is a populist, dictatorial, hot temper, bullying, all the, and I don't want to call names, but those are the adjectives that we need to see here, and they are the ones that name the kind of character that we have in Donald Trump. And really, what he has mentioned about possible policies, foreign policies, is very concerning to me, that he's proposing walls, that he's proposing exclusion of people that are not necessarily part of the radicals that are raking havoc on the world right now. Mm-hmm. And really, he hasn't proposed anything in depth of what he will do except a hard hand, and I am by birth, I'm a U.S. citizen, but I'm by birth Latin America, and I do see what is happening in Latin America and what is happening in history. That's another person's, that's the danger that we are facing.
Moni, you come from Latin America regionally. Do you think the United States could have a better policy toward Latin America? Do you think Obama's been optimal in his policy there?
I think he could have probably be a bit more objective about certain processes in Latin America, but I think at least there is a more rational process to it and a more like democratic and diplomatic road than what I hear now from our new candidate. And so simply to summarize, how can we protect the world is my question to and my call to all the voters is how can we protect the world or how could someone protect the world with a hot temper, an irrational, quick to judgment, and very, very quick to say what he will do without thinking it through. Like, we see how
Monica, we've got it, and I really appreciate your call out. Thank you very much for calling. Carlos Chirinos, let's go to the number one foreign policy statement from Donald Trump. Right out of the gate when he announces candidacy, the wall. We're going to put up a wall, and he repeats that every time he's asked about it, every time he has a chance. You heard the Mexican leader say, Vicente Fox saying, we're not going to pay for that bleeping wall. Okay, Donald Trump gets into office, and, you know, people expect the wall to begin. What's Mexico's response?
Well, Mexico has said that they're not going to pay for the wall. And, of course, there's no way that a country, a partner, can force the hand on the other partner.
Are you sure about that? Maybe he can go to the trade agreements and say, look, you pay for that wall, or you're going to have tariffs, or we're going to have a tariff that will pay for the wall.
You remember he proposed a month ago to seize the money people are sending back to Mexico and
right.
that way keep the money for paying the wall. But that, I mean, everything that he's proposing until now is not just outrageous, but from a practical point of view, it's very difficult to see how will this apply because there's a lot of I mean, my vision regarding a future government of Donald Trump is that from day one, that government would be blocked in course. Every decision they will present, if he is going to follow with his proposal from the campaign trail, they will be blocked by somebody that will present a challenge in court to the wall, to the Muslim ban, for example. All those kind of things, because everything goes against basic human rights, citizen rights, in a way. So I don't think that even Mexico or other countries will have to be dealing with that, because it's very difficult to see how Trump's White House will be applying those laws. I mean, of course, there are ways, there are executive actions, but we have seen President Obama, for example, he wanted to do something on immigration, and he hasn't been able to because precisely some people complain about that.
Yeah, but boy, the pressure is going to be great if Donald Trump is in the White House. The promise is so big, it's so tall, it's big as the Great Wall. He's going to have to try and do something. I don't know what exactly that would be. Gordon, what about in Europe? Imagine a Trump presidency. The polls are not, they're not so far apart, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. It could happen. How does Europe respond? I mean, Britain's out. Now, if the U.S. is looking in this new sort of, well, we'll do what we like way, does Europe have leverage to take on a kind of my way or the highway America in 2017?
I think European leaders would, in the first place, hope that Donald Trump, once he's in the White House, would start to be a rational political leader. I mean, I know it's a vague hope, but we heard Angela Merkel earlier. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm now very focused on what's happening in 2016. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, she will say the same. She will go step by step and try to deal with all the challenges that are coming. And Donald Trump would, from a European perspective, he would be a big challenge, but he would only be one of many challenges. We have problems in France, we have challenges in Austria, in Hungary, in Great Britain, everywhere the nationalist, yeah, populist leaders are rising. So, I mean, it would be one more. We hope it's not going to happen, but we would try to find a rational solution.
Joyce Karem, Donald Trump wins. Imagine the scenario. He turns to the Middle East, and he gets forceful. I don't know if that's rhetorically forceful or really forceful. How does the Middle East respond to a sort of tougher whip hand, if that's what it is, from America?
Well, Tom, I think the uncertainty we have now about the Middle East that has about America will only triple with a Donald Trump presidency. I think the region will look more inward and would not be looking to the U.S. for security assurances.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Maybe that's a good thing.
Seeing how things are unfolding in the region, it's a terrible thing. I mean, the U.S. is an anchor of stability in the region, has long been. Israel is dependent on the U.S. for diplomacy and security assurances. So, yeah, this uncertainty, I think, will be right and left if we see a Trump presidency.
This has been a really interesting hour, and I want to thank all three of you. Carlos Chirinos, senior political editor for Univision, with us just outside the hall in Cleveland. Carlos, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Gordon Rapinski with Der Spiegel, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks,
Gordon.
Tom. It was a pleasure.
And Joyce Karem with Al Hayat, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us from Cleveland. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up next hour on Point, Francisco Goya, the Spanish painter of war and upheaval. He's relevant right now again. We'll go to Goya. That's coming up next hour on Point.